Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to another session of the afternoon satsang. Both myself and Prem from Team Radio Sai are really thrilled, excited, and full of joy in welcoming you for this satsang. What is the reason for this special joy? Well, there is a long-standing cause and an immediate cause. The long-standing cause, of course, is something that all of us share in common. The joy and the gratitude for having known Swami in our lives. Really, dear brothers and sisters, if we just pause for a moment and ponder about what a great blessing it is that we just know Swami, forget everything else, just the knowledge of the avatar that walked in flesh and blood on the face of the earth. It is such a beautiful blessing, and I am sure when we contemplate, we will realize in our own ways as to how just the knowledge of His presence in our lives is such a redeeming and such a beautiful, thrilling truth. The immediate cause is something again that all of us will share. If like us, if you too have been tuned in for at least the last 5-6 minutes to the live stream, the instrumental piece that was played just now, Humko Tumse Pyar Kitana, even as we hear the melodies of those notes, those melodious notes, and most beautiful, the embedded voice of Bhagwan in the middle of that instrumental piece. Dear listeners, if you missed it, please go to our website, download this 90th birthday special, Humko Tumse Pyar Kitana instrumental, and hear it. As you hear Bhagwan's voice, you will feel tremendous self-confidence, self-sacrifice, and even beams of self-realization dawning in your heart, because that will be the dawn of truth and love in the heart. That is what the magical voice of Bhagwan does. And so that is the reason both Prem and myself are in a very exuberant and happy, happy mood. And we will be proceeding to have a discussion on what we call as the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradhana. Needless to say, this topic has been inspired by the recently concluded Aradhana Mahotsavam. With that, I welcome Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and as you said, of course it does, has its source in the Aradhana Mahotsavam. And when you look at the Aradhana Mahotsavam, it's really a very difficult event in Swami's life, in our journey with Swami, to explain, right? It's when it happened, it was definitely anything but the happiest day of our life. In fact, it could be even dubbed as the worst we have felt, you know, in Swami's presence. Mm-hmm. Being in Swami's presence, being able to see Swami, I don't think we would have felt more miserable. That's the best way I can describe it. But nevertheless, nobody can take away the significance of that event. You know, I think sometime last week we had put out an article by Professor G. Venkatraman on this particular thing, this day, that year. About these particular 3-4 days, his reflections, because he had the opportunity to go to the hospital every day and directly interact with the doctors to find out from them what is Swami's situation. So he recollected all that, and one of our readers wrote back to us kind of upset with the article, saying that, you know, why do you go back to that time and, you know, show pictures of Swami lying there like that? You know, because we are trying to convince people that Swami is beyond the body. There is nothing like death for Swami. And why do you go back to these and start putting these images again? You know, I agree with the sentiment with which that mail was sent to us, and I can understand the pain which these images invoke in us. But I think what is important is you cannot look at hope and learning by overlooking these events. I think we have to face the reality, look at these things, say that Swami did this for a particular purpose. We might not be able to understand that purpose in its entirety, but I think an attempt is definitely what is needed. And if not for that, Swami would not have done what he did, the way he did it.
Very wisely put, Prem, because even as you were sharing the contents of the mail written by that reader, I was reminded of similar sentiments that coursed through me a few years ago during the first Aradhana Mahotsavam. Mm-hmm. That was in 2012. It was the 1-year anniversary of Bhagwan's departure from the physical. And that was the first year that the Shri Sathya Sai Aradhana Mahotsavam was being celebrated. Now, those who have even the rudimentary knowledge of Sanskrit will know that the term Mahotsavam is derived from Maha and Utsavam. Utsavam meaning festival and Maha meaning great and grandly.
And Utsavam, you could say that root of that word Utsavam is actually enthusiasm. A kind of Utsaham, the word which we use, a bursting energy and happiness.
Yes, that is what happens during festivals.
Festivals, right.
And this day was not being termed as an ordinary festival. It was being termed as a grand and the greatest of festivals, a Mahotsavam. You know, every cell in my body rebelled at this thought at that time. My thought was, we celebrate Rama Navami as the birth of Sri Rama. Do we celebrate his passing? We celebrate Krishna Janmashtami. Do we celebrate the passing of Krishna? What are we celebrating on the day of the Mahotsavam? Why are we calling it Mahotsavam? This is Aradhana. Aradhana means worship in a direct translation. So I can understand Aradhana day. But Aradhana Mahotsavam? Once again, if our conviction and faith in Swami is complete, then we will surely realize that nothing ever happens without His will. When they say not a blade of grass moves without His will, it is not possible that the day get termed as Aradhana Mahotsavam if it was not His will. So, assuming, this is the assumption I am making, that all of us have this kind of complete faith in Swami. So, our satsang also will proceed along that assumption itself, that all of us believe completely in this thing that Swami knows everything and whatever is happening is for the good. So what is left is for us to discover how does the Aradhana day become an Aradhana Mahotsavam. And that is why we have picked up this topic as the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradhana. Aadhar means basis and Dhara means the flow. So the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradhana means the basis for the flow of worship. And dear listeners, it shall be our attempt today to try and examine what possibly could have been the message for all of us from the Shri Sathya Sai Aradhana Mahotsavam.
Right, and before we come to that, you know, if you are a worshipper of Swami, if you are a lover of God, for us, God is nothing different from Swami. And that is one way of looking at Aradhana Mahotsavam and what would a day such as this mean to us. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, in general, you know, when you pursue something, when you seek something, when you start a journey, there is always a destination which you are trying to reach. And there are innumerable distractions in the way which could take you either way. Like suppose you start from here, you're going to Bangalore. You might have many distractions on the way. You might want to shop somewhere. You might stop somewhere. You can do all that provided you know where your focus is. You know where you're trying to head to. And at any time, you know where exactly you want to go and by what time you want to go. If your mind, one part of your mind is focused on that, you would not get lost in the way. So I think any pursuit, let it be the spiritual pursuit. Let's say that you're a karma yogi with a certain pursuit, or you're a devotee, you know, somebody who says that merging in my divine is my goal. I think each one of these paths, or let it be that you're just a normal human being trying to lead a good life without hurting anybody and earning your living in a righteous manner, I think each of this also will have a certain destination. And it is very important for us to keep looking at our own life and looking at our journey and seeing whether it is leading to that destination, or are we losing our way. And that is why when we say, I pray to Swami, I worship Swami, I love Swami, what is that love supposed to lead you to? Is it leading you there, or is it leading you to distractions on the way? And this is a question which needs to be asked, and I think if we ask this question, that itself will reveal the importance of the Aradhana Mahotsavam.
It is not as if we are being selfish here. It is not that we are asking, why do I love Swami? What is it, unless I know what is it that I am aiming to get from this whole thing, what is the use of loving Swami? It is not in that sense. It's not in the sense of selfishness, but more so in the sense like how we plan each and everything. Like if we say, in life for me, my career is important. I have a goal there. I wish to achieve a certain position, or maybe I wish to start my own company, something that I wish to do, for which I see this as a smaller step. In the same way, in our spiritual pursuit also, that is, if we are, I'm saying this with a disclaimer that, again, we are assuming that we are going behind Swami only for spirituality. Because if it is for some other worldly pursuit, it possibly will not come into the domain of this discussion. So if we are pursuing Swami or whatever, his bhajans, his discourses, his teachings, visiting the places that he has stayed in, all this comes under the umbrella of pursuing Swami. So if we are pursuing Swami, what is the end that we wish to achieve, in the sense that how do I see myself? Why am I wanting Swami? What is it that Swami can give me that other things can't give me? No, these are definitely questions that we have to ponder. Otherwise, it will be like sitting in a car and traveling, starting off towards a place, knowing that theoretically I am going to Bangalore, but taking wrong roads and getting lost on the way. Theoretically, I know I am going to Bangalore, but I need to know how it will be along the way and what it means by reaching Bangalore. I need to know that as soon as the airport comes, oh ho, this is where I am. I need to know the milestones. After I cross the airport, there will be boards which are possibly in Kannada also. That is another hint for me that, you know what, I am now very close to Bangalore. I am possibly in Bangalore. Definitely, so there is a need for recognizing some kind of signs, some kind of landmarks, whatever we call, so that our journey to Swami is not just a theoretical one. It's not that we just know, I want to merge in Swami, what does that even mean? I want to attain the lotus feet of the Lord, what does that even mean? Apart from words, what does it mean to me in my heart? So, that is why it becomes important to ask these questions, possibly to some extent intellectualize it, before getting it imprinted finally in our heart, and knowing what is it that we actually want.
So, very true. In fact, just with what you're telling, what comes to me is, for any pursuit, let that be spiritual or otherwise, I think two things are very important. One which we spoke about now, which is focus. And the other thing is earnestness. Because sometimes you might start a spiritual journey without knowing where it's going to lead.
Mm.
But if you're earnest enough, you might not even have the focus. But if you have the earnestness, you could still reach the destination. Like, you know, a perfect analogy which Swami would say, if you want to traverse a distance of 2 kilometers, you don't need a searchlight which is going to show you 2 kilometers the distance ahead. You just need a lantern which can give you just 2 steps lighting. And that is enough. That's what earnestness can do. Because if you take the example, let us take somebody like little Dhruva. You know, he starts off praying to God for a place on his father's lap. But because he was earnest in his search, you know, the process of penance itself gave him the maturity to ask for the right thing when that moment came. Though he did not start with that. But take the example of some, you know, there are plenty of examples for that. Somebody like Hiranyakashipu. He starts off with the wrong prayer, but his focus is on the wrong prayer, that even when that opportunity comes, he still asks for the wrong thing which he started with. It did not happen with, the same thing what happened with Dhruva did not happen with him. You know, when God appeared in front of him, he still asked for what his ego wanted. There was no transformation in him. So I think it's very important, focus is very important. At the same time, at every moment, what am I actually seeking? Is what I'm doing leading me to what I'm actually seeking? So it's a focus and Shraddha, which is a mix of that. And that way, if we analyze our journey with Swami, I think that's what we are going to try to do with prayers to Swami. Hope we're able to present it with a little bit of clarity.
Okay, so let's start off in this manner. Maybe analyzing our spiritual journey and Swami is not such an easy task. Definitely, because it involves physical, the mental, the metaphysical, the psychological and everything. Let us take something a little more simpler. All of us, to a certain extent, seek financial security. We seek relationships. We seek power in the world.
Right.
Why do we seek any of these? For instance, let us start with, why do we seek money? Why do all of us want more money?
You know, the superficial answer to that would be like, no, I want to buy this. I want to, you know, live a comfortable life. I want to fill my life with these objects and gadgets and all that. But if you look at it a little more deeply, I think the feeling is when I have a need, when I want to do something, the lack of money should not be a constraint on me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what we seek money for is for that. When I need money, it should be there. You know, the lack of money should not curtail my freedom in any way.
Absolutely can understand what you're saying. For instance, you know, we feel that our money, if we have stored up lakhs or millions of dollars in a bank account, then we feel safe and secure.
Right.
Though physically there's no difference. I don't have a dollar in my hand, I don't have a rupee in my hand, but just the knowledge that it's there in the bank, it makes me feel good.
And we always plan ahead with appreciation of prices and all that, especially when you do pension planning, right?
Exactly. So when you do all that, you do all that and you keep it aside.
And you actually, as you said, you actually don't have the money. It's all projected wealth.
Exactly. It's projected wealth and it's just a blip, a number on a screen. You know, and when these massive frauds takes place, that's what happens. The number just gets erased. We see it in Hollywood movies also, you know. The number, that sound comes and it's erased and it's down to zero and your $1 million have vanished. Though that is shown that way in Hollywood movies, in reality, that's what happened a few years ago when we had this financial crash. There were not one or two, but there were thousands and millions across the globe who saw their savings and lifetime earnings just go in a blip. In a blip, when the financial bubble burst, it burst many lives along with it. Now, when that happens, you suddenly realize what is the use. You know, bank possibly is not the safest place. And that led to the trend of hoarding gold. You know, you hoard gold and you keep, and it's just because you feel that I've done all this and I've hoarded the money. But tomorrow if I feel I need money to buy a car, when I actually have the capacity, I'm thinking I have the capacity to buy 10 cars, I'm not even able to buy a bike now because the whole thing is just gone.
Right.
So at that time, you know, your sense of security changes, and that's why people start hoarding in gold. Because you think, gold is real. It's real with me. Nobody can take it away. You know, well, it's not out of place to mention and also offer our deepest prayers to the recent victims of the Nepal earthquake.
Right.
You know, just imagine all the gold, the property, whatever you have kept at home, in a matter of a few seconds, in moments, it's entirely gone, wiped out. No trace of it at all. Again, I mean, you know.
Very true.
What do you mean by safety, security?
No, it's like you invest in real estate. You would have earned your entire lifetime's earnings. You put it on buying a home. You buy it and you think that you've safely invested in real estate, because they say that the real estate never depreciates,
falls.
Right?
Mm.
You know, you never lose the money which you put in your homes and in real estate. But imagine an earthquake like this. I mean, you're just brought back to 20, 30 years back in your life.
More, in fact, sometimes.
Right.
Yes, the whole thing comes collapsing. And, you know, it brings back, first, of course, it brings a lot of sorrow and a lot of prayers. And really, your heart goes out to the brethren there who are in such dire need of assistance of any kind. But then, you know, on a little more contemplation, your mind goes to that Bhajagovindam shloka, where Shankaracharya says, Ma kuru dhana jana yavana garvam. Harati nimeshat kala sarvam. It means don't pride over your youth, your wealth, your possessions, because harati nimeshat. In a moment, if time wishes, time can just withdraw all of that. That is what has actually happened. 10 seconds back, you are a prosperous landowner, a good, happy farmer, a successful businessman, and a few moments later, you are a nobody with nothing. And that is the time possibly you, not only the people who are affected, you know, Prem, even you and me, we start thinking, what is the use of our pursuit of wealth, if we are pursuing wealth? Because, you know, I might spend 20 years, 30 years of my life pursuing it and build it up. One financial meltdown, one earthquake, and I'm set back by 30 years. All my 30 years of life means nothing. If at all it means something, it'll gain meaning only if I learn the lesson that, you know, this is not the way I get freed from the lack of money. Owning more money is not the way to get freed from the fear of lacking money. Look at the life of Shirdi Baba, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Satya Sai Baba, all, anyone. They never actually possessed anything. They never possessed anything, but they never lacked anything. And not lacking anything is in no way correlated to their standard of living. Shirdi Baba had a different standard of living. Swami too, possibly you may think that he had a good standard of living, but that's possibly the last 8-9 years of his life. If you look at his whole life, standard of living has been from very, 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 very frugal to quite comfortable also. But his standard of life has remained the same. So it definitely brings to light the truth that what we seek money is not actually seeking more quantity of money. There is something more than that. That is the truth that is flashed in front of our eyes when we see such meltdowns, whether it's financial, such shake-ups, I mean, whether it's a financial shake-up or a literal shake-up of the earth.
Very true, and definitely, as you said, our hearts do go out in prayers to all these people. And, you know, a situation like this definitely calls for our action. But as much as it calls for our action, as you said, it really calls for a reflection too. Because, you know, there's one ad which comes on TV now. I think it features some of the top cricket players. The ad is about to play that perfect shot on the match day. You should have played that shot a few thousand times before you actually face that ball. You know, that's what practice can do to you. And that is why even if you see the Indian culture, the way they say, the dharma which is there for a person in crisis is different from the dharma which you're supposed to follow when everything is normal. Similarly, I think the idea is, if you're able to condition your mind when you're not in crisis, that's when you'll react properly when in crisis. And when something like this happens, of course, you know, it's far from our homes, it's got nothing to do with our lives, but we go and help definitely. But at the same time, we have to take the lesson. Yes, I'm holding this money. Tomorrow, if this happens to me, is what I'm trying to get by seeking money, am I getting it by having all this money? And that is why, as we said, it's actually freedom that we seek. The ability to be free from the constraint that the lack of money will place on us.
As you said, it is very important that we learn, because they say a wise man learns from other people's experiences.
Exactly. You know, man with common sense learns from his mistakes, but a wise man learns from others' mistakes.
And in this case, possibly not a mistake, other person's experience. Because, you know, that is what is a lesson from death. You know, you see death happening every day. Death is a great reality that stares us. But how many of us are ready to face death? Possibly our own death, possibly death in family. In the same way, such earthquakes or such natural disasters, we have seen it happening the world over. I cannot prevent an earthquake from happening to my place. It's much beyond my control.
Right.
But what happens after the earthquake to me, if I live, that definitely depends on me, and I can learn it now. I need not wait for an earthquake to strike me so that I can learn it. You know, I feel like this because in many ways, if we see, there's not much difference between the earthquake that has struck Nepal and the earthquake that hit us on the 24th of April 2011. Very, very same, very similar emotions. If you take photographs of people on the 24th of April 2011 and the photographs of people in Nepal, it is similar, wailing, loss, and people feel that everything, their setback. If in Nepal people may feel that they have been set back by 30 years, here people felt that they have been set back by several lifetimes. It's all over. That is how the feeling was. And, you know, at that moment, now looking back to that day, of course at that moment all these thoughts didn't come, but looking back to that occasion, it just feels that I had not prepared myself enough. That is why I got devastated by that earthquake. Now also, you know, on several forums when you go, you see people spewing hate towards God. You see them saying, why had God to do this? Why God has to do this? God doesn't have God doesn't have any business in harming humans if he can't help them. He does no help, but he simply sends earthquakes and destroys. One can understand that might be just an outpouring of anger and anguish. But when you look at such outpourings, Prem, you and me, I don't think we were any different from that. We also did the same. Maybe we didn't use those words, but we did the same. We said, Swami, why did you do this? Though we have not used the words, the intention and the feelings in our heart was only that Swami, you let us down.
Very true.
Just like the people are saying, God let us down and did this, we also felt the same towards Swami. Now, when you read a person abusing God like that, you feel, oh, no, you are in pain now, so it's fine. This is not the truth. The truth is something else. Possibly we may not know the absolute truth, but we know that definitely is not the truth. So also, putting, you know, in that perspective, when we look at Aradhana Day, don't you think it is right that we tell ourselves also that, you know what, this is not the truth. It is not the truth that Swami just left us to fend for ourselves, hapless and helpless, and just, you know, ditched us and went off. That is not the truth. It is just my anguish that is speaking. So if that is not the truth, what is the truth?
Absolutely. I mean, let's put ourselves in the place of somebody. Let's say there's a father who's like earned millions with the idea that this money is going to save my children. This money is going to be helpful for my children. Imagine a person like that who might not have been able to save his child in a disaster such as this with all the money. Do you think after that he will go back and pursue the money in the same manner in which he pursued it till that event happened? Won't he feel that it's so useless? You know, I can have a billion, but that billion couldn't have saved my child. Wouldn't he have a strong sense of detachment to, you know, what he has chased like his passion? I think exactly as you said, you know, that's the same feeling which we had when, on 24th April, when it happened. Because, you know, we pursued that form. We were mad after that form. A word from that form was, you know, the nectar from heaven for us. But when we knew, that very form was lying in front of us. And I don't think I've had darshan for as long a period of time as I had on that day. Because we could sit for so many hours. I think we sat the entire night. But was that darshan important? Was that darshan giving us the same satisfaction that we sought? I think that is the question, and that should really hit us. And I'm sure it's hit most of us. But what makes the difference is who seizes that opportunity. Because if you look at it, you know, the story from the scriptures of Janaka having that dream. How many of us have woken up from a dream which felt so real? So you wake up and you feel that this dream, but how many of us pursued that thought and till the point where it made some sense to us? And you know, it gave us what it had to give. Similarly, all of us would have felt that, you know, that Smashana Vairagya or Prasha Vairagya, we've spoken much about it earlier. You know, that strong sense of detachment. But I think what's important is to hold on to that with earnestness and the focus and try to see what is exactly the message which Swami is giving through this Aradhana Mahotsav.
As you said, you know, before when we had Swami in the physical form, we love Swami and we have faith that He is God. But then, you know, I think it was you can call it Maya or you can call it as our own confusion, our misunderstanding, or maybe our narrow vision, lack of broad-mindedness, that we restricted God to Swami's form. In the sense that Swami often says, see God in a stone. But don't transform God into a stone. Don't, you know, worship a stone as, revere a stone as God, but don't treat God as a stone.
Right.
Not exactly that to that sense, but that is what we did by restricting Swami to a form. We felt that pleasing Swami was to do possibly a little antique on sports day in front of Him and see a smile on His face. Of course, that is pleasing Swami. But only that is not pleasing Swami. We thought helping Swami is as He walked to hold a basket of fruit so that He can distribute easily. To hold a basket of vibhuti to distribute easily. And we felt it a privilege to get that chance to help Swami. Later years when He had difficulty walking, we thought to hold His hand and walk was a great privilege and a pleasure. And it was a service to Swami that we didn't mind doing. And we did all this because we wanted to go closer to our Lord. We wanted to get dearer to our Lord. And then this happens, which just renders insignificant and useless everything that has happened before it. How does it matter whether I held the basket thrice for Him or four times for Him? Who is there to appreciate that now? Who is there to appreciate? Because that who, if I consider it as that body, it's gone now. It's gone. It's gone totally. My condition is just like that father who saved up millions and millions for his son and just lost his son. The million don't matter at all now. It doesn't matter at all.
And there's another important twist in the perspective. Even as you're saying this, it strikes me, you know, many of us come to Swami not exactly for Swami. Let's be honest, we don't come really for Swami. We come for what Swami gives. We had done an entire satsang on that, you know, whether we come for Swami or what Swami is here to give. But nevertheless, given the fact that we don't come really for Swami, we give importance to what He gave because He gave it. Just reminded of an incident which somebody was narrating. You know, in those days when Swami used to spend hours together standing in those porticos and standing and talking to the students, after the first round of interviews, Swami would come out and behind the Ganesha, it used to be packed. You know, we've all seen that scene. 3-4 rows on either side and a very narrow path for Swami to walk by. And Swami would stand there for, I don't know how many hours he has spent standing and talking with boys and just anything under the sun, Swami would talk. And many times, you know, Swami would stand for 45, 50 minutes. So, you know, any of us do that, we shift our weight from one leg to the other, right? To, you know,
to ease one leg.
So when Swami would do that, Swami would lift his feet. So these little boys were there, you know what they would do? They would slip their hand under Swami's feet. And Swami would also know it, and Swami would put his feet on their, you know, on their hands. And this used to be a chance, okay? Imagine, in the same mandir, when you're sitting, let's say one of your friends is walking by, and by mistake he stamps your feet. How we shout at that person. Or even the devotee side, I'm sure that kind of thing would be happening. But here you are willfully putting your foot, your hand under Swami's feet, and sometimes Swami would really get mischievous and put all his weight on that hand and, you know, see how much you can bear. But we enjoyed that pain, we enjoyed that mischief. Because it was coming from Swami. So even what we think we came thinking that, you know, I came seeking this, I came seeking that, I came for what Swami is giving. We gave value to that because it was coming from Swami. So without our knowledge, even in that selfish seeking, some amount of that seeking was actually seeking of Swami. And when we are talking now about, you know, the same thing. If you search for, I mean, you pursue money for something. For that matter, put anything in that. Let's say you pursue health. You know, we all want good health. We don't think of the body unless there is a disease. You know, the moment the pain starts, you start thinking about the body. Right? And I think we had the interview with Raja Reddy Garu. He was telling that he is a very, very strict practitioner of yoga. And he was saying that some people say that too much of yoga and, you know, doing all these exercises will lead to body consciousness because you're taking too much care of the body. He said, no, it's the other way around. You take good care of the body, you don't have to think about the body. The body will take care of itself. So in that sense, even health, when you pursue, you don't want a disease or a pain to trouble you. You don't want it to place a constraint on you. You want to be free of that. So in that matter, whatever you pursue, you want it to be independent of any factor outside or inside.
Exactly. You pursue something so that you have such an abundance of that thing that you'll never have to think of staying away from that thing in your life, if we can summarize it. I pursue money so that I have such an abundance of money that I never will have to think of life without money. I pursue health so that I have an abundance of health so that never again in my life I'll have to ever think of staying away from health. Extending the same logic, I pursue Swami because I want to have such an abundance of Swami in my life that I never will have to think in my life ever again of being separated from Swami. And that is why the Aradhana Day event episode hits me so strongly, because it makes me feel that all that I built up till now, all that I have done, all that I have done to enhance this and ensure that Swami never leaves me, in one cruel twist of fate and one cruel blow of time, everything is just snatched away and I'm back to ground zero. That is why it hurts a lot. That is why it evokes such strong emotions. And that is why it is important that we ponder on what I can say is the gift of the Aradhana Day.
Absolutely. And if you look at it, you know, just bringing in another perspective, we are talking about pursuing money and, you know, or trying to pursue something which is outside. So the idea is, let me have enough of it so that that does not disturb me. But if you look at spirituality, and I think that's where the change in paradigm comes. Spirituality says that you already have it inside you. You just ensure that you reach a state where there no change outside can actually affect it. It says that you have all the freedom and peace within you. Just reach a state where that freedom and peace is not dependent on the money you have, on the health you have, on the friends you have around you. If you reach that state, then you can reach that ultimate freedom. Now, put the same equation and put Swami in there. Where is the Swami that you are seeking? Where is the Swami whom you wanted? Where is the Swami you desired for? He's right inside you. And if you are able to find Him in the manner in which you would find that peace within, where nothing outside can affect you, the darshan timings outside will not affect you, whether Swami is in Vrindavan, whether Swami is in Puttaparthi, whether Swami is away in Delhi or Bombay, that will not affect you, because you have found Him in a manner where He is independently yours. I think that's why we use the word independence as synonym for freedom. That which is not dependent on anything else is completely yours.
You know, in light of what you said, it's almost as if, it's not almost as if, it is definitely truth. It's definitely the truth, because Swami has said it, that each one of us is the embodiment of God. So each one of us is that divinity that we are seeking. Now, it is almost as if the form, the entrancing form, the bewitchingly beautiful form that we are so attached to, is actually a distraction that takes us away from that divinity within to the form external. As you said, if I can ensure that nothing external can disturb what is internal, that is enough. It is as if here we have allowed something external to disturb that internal, because it has taken our concept of divinity, our concept of being one with God, away from the internal to an external form. Why did God have to do that? Because, you know, it is better, as they say, wake a tamasic person into a rajasic. Swami says, tamasic is sloth.
Right.
Rajasic is passionate action.
Activity.
But passionate action leads to desire for results, which can lead to frustration. That's why you have to go to sattvic activity. But sattvic activity is binding. That is when you go beyond the gunas. So it is a stepwise process. So if you ask, is intense passionate activity good? It depends. The answer will be, it depends. Because it depends on whether a tamasic person is coming into rajasic activity or a sattvic. If a sattvic person is descending into rajasic activity, it's bad. If a tamasic person, you know, it's like an inert person is doing passionate activity, it is better than no activity. Passionate activity is better than no activity, but it is not better than impassionate activity. You know, involved but dispassionate activity. So therefore, it's all relative. In that sense, Swami coming and drawing adoration to a form of God, towards God itself, is a billion times better than not knowing God in our lives at all. But then the next stage is, as you said, where the external becomes a distraction from the internal, and therefore the external has to be withdrawn. And it almost feels that this was a forcible step Swami took for the benefit of the entire humanity.
So that, dear listeners, is where we have come so far in this discussion, but there's a few more beautiful things to talk about, and they are beautiful because they are from Swami and these are insights directly from Swami. But before we come to that, we'll take a short break. We'll play out a sweet song for you. Don't go away. On the other side of the song, we'll resume our discussion.
Sai Ra. హృదయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థన మీకోసమే హృదయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థన మీకోసమే ప్రాణదీపమామం దయతో దీవించుమా ప్రాణదీపమామం దయతో దీవించుమా జయ విరహము మదిన ప్రార్థనా నీ కోసమే జయ రా సాయి రా दिल के अंधियारों में साई दीप तेरे हैं, दिल के अंधियारों में साई दीप तेरे हैं। आंधी में बहारों के ये नगमे तेरे हैं, आंधी में बहारों के नगमे तेरे हैं।
लौट आए देखो कोए बिछड़े तेरे द्वारे हैं,
लौट आए देखो कोए बिछड़े तेरे द्वारे हैं।
सुनी राहों में हम सफर साई तू ही है, सुनी राहों में हम सफर साई तू ही है। हृदय विरहमो मदिन प्रार्थना मीको समी, हृदय विरहमो मदिन प्रार्थना मीको समी।
रामाय राम भद्राय रामचंद्राय वेधसे, रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय वदये नमः।
साई राम तेरा प्यार के वंदना, साई राम तेरा प्यार के निकले दिल से
है ये दिल की पुकार।
चरणों में रख लो साईं बाबा,
चरणों में रख लो साईं बाबा।
हमको तुमसे
welcome back, dear listeners. We were at that point in our discussion where we were looking at the possibility of the beautiful external form of Swami itself becoming a distraction, because when we seek Swami, we seek Swami with the intention that we should never lack Swami in our lives. And today when we look back at those times when we feel that we are lacking Swami in our lives, it's possibly because we have got so attached to that form. And the lack of that form makes us feel the lack of Swami in our lives. That is something definitely we have to overcome if at all we really want to have Swami in our lives full time. So, yes, when we are on the path to seeking Swami, we find so many distractions. Till now, we used to discuss only of those distractions which are worldly by nature, what we consider as worldly and non-Swami in nature. Today, as we discuss, we also realize that Swami himself, in the form that we know as Swami, can become a distraction. And this is not just a theoretical possibility that we are discussing. If we look back at life experiences, I'm sure, Prem, that we will see that this has happened many times, where, you know, apart from the so-called, in quotes, worldly distractions, Swami also seems to become a part of those distractions. Possibly as a test or possibly whatever, but I'm sure there are many experiences like that.
Very true. We started by telling about seeking Swami and seeking what Swami gives. There's always that seeking Swami in whatever we even looked for from Swami. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you know, you think, like, let's say suppose Swami is picking up students for the Kodai trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even if you're part of a Kodai trip, even those boys who get selected for a Kodai trip, no, they will have within themselves that inquisitiveness to know, did Swami himself think of my name, or was my name suggested to Swami?
Mm.
You know, many times it happens, because there will be some very surprise entries. So they will be really like, you know, Swami thought of me, Or was it that Swami said, I want a singer, and Warden said, you know, there's a singer, Swami, he's a very good boy. He's got a very good decorum in the hostel.
Especially, these are the boys who previously would not have received much
attention
from
right.
me, or talking to Swami or anything like that. Huh?
Absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, you know, as we started this discussion, Aradhana Mahotsavam is a name we take that Swami has willed for this day. Similarly, at the end of the day, if you're going to be a part of a trip, like a Kote trip with Swami, you definitely are a chosen one. But even within that, we wonder, was it directly from Swami, or was it, you know, suggested to Swami? Many times when we have a very, very burning desire, let's say you come with a certain problem, and when you say, Swami, I have this problem, I'm seeking a solution from you, but I want the solution only from you. I'm not going to take a solution from anybody and say that, okay, this is Swami giving me the solution through somebody. When you make a prayer like that, when your prayer changes its color like that, I feel you are wanting Swami more strongly than what you have come asking Swami for. I think that is a time when it's an opportunity which everybody has, I feel. You know, in very, very small ways, I've seen devotees talking about this. You know, when they come for darshan, there would be an opportunity to do something which is not right and get a seat in front. Mm. You know, that would be like you are grabbing an opportunity which is being given to you, rather than you saying that, no, Swami, I'm going to go through a straight way. If the fifth row or the tenth row is what I get, I'll sit there. I will wait till the day when you give me yourself what I'm seeking.
Mm.
I feel that way, even you look at a closed darshan as something which Swami is giving and not what Swami is. And you say, Swami, I will receive it when you give it to me. And I think when this change happens, that is when there is a lot of opportunity for you to bite the, you know, the bait. Mm-hmm. Of taking something which is lesser.
Mm. You seem to have a gleam in your eye as if you had personally underwent something like that.
I think all of us have. For us, I think, you know, when we are students of Swami, mm-hmm. and few of us after we finished our studies, we would get into that adamant mode when we say, Swami, you tell me what I have to do.
Mm.
In a sense, that was a way by telling Swami, this is how important you are. Because here is an important decision I have to make. It's a career choice.
You have completed your education, and for further, usually what people call as a career. Working.
Right. You know, you have a career choice to make.
Mm.
You say, Swami, this is very important for me, but you tell me what I'm supposed to do, and I'm ready to wait till you tell me what I'm supposed to do. It is just that, you know, just telling Swami, you're so important that I'm prepared to wait till whenever you decide the time is. Okay, at this time, there would be a lot of elders who will come and tell you that, you know, you're good at this, so you should go and do research, or you're good at this, why don't you go and join Radio Sai? And they will tell that, why can't you take it that Swami is telling through me? Which is not untrue completely, which is definitely the truth. Everybody speaks, you know, we always say that Swami speak through me. So an elder who is coming with a good intention and giving you a good piece of advice, it could well be that it is Swami guiding through him.
I also remember some would say that the youth is the time when most energies are
right.
there. Why do you
and they
while
would quote
it away?
Swami's discourses.
Huh. Why do you while it away doing nothing?
Right.
Do something.
Right. Yeah. And these are all advices which are definitely given with good intentions. But I think that is where, as a devotee, when you say that, Swami, this is what I want. And I want this not out of ego or anything else. I want this because I want you. This is a way of me telling that I want you more than anything else in life. I want you more than a glorious and a career. Because you choosing it is more important than what I get. So I think even in life, many times, when you are able to say that, Swami, I want only you, and I want you, when you choose to give it to me, directly, not through anybody else.
Mm.
I think that is a confusion which a lot of us go into. And
yeah. And we had actually started discussing, saying that in such circumstances, things may also arise where you start feeling, you know, where God himself seems to become a party to the worldly side, where, you know, Professor G. Venkatraman puts this very beautifully. He says, God is a teacher. A teacher has two roles. One as a coach, one as an examiner. It is very, very important for the individual student to make out when God is the coach and when he's an examiner. When it is that when he says, go and jump, you're supposed to jump. And when it is, when he says go and jump, you're supposed to think that it is a test. And should I directly obey or not obey? So, these are the instances we are saying where, you know, even God may seem to become like a distraction.
Absolutely. I'm just perfect reminder of a perfect example for this, which one of our lecturers once shared, you know, typically. So, here was this lecturer in a very typical situation. He had completed his studies. He wanted Swami to guide him as to what he has to do. And Swami had also told that, I will tell you what you are supposed to do. He had finished his BSc. So Swami told him, I will tell you. And there were a few other boys along with him whom Swami had said that, no, you go back and serve your parents and you continue your studies if you wish to. I mean, there is nothing more that I am here to advise you about. So you can carry on. But this boy, Swami had told that you stay back, I'll tell you. Okay? So now he is waiting for Swami's instructions. So how do you know what is Swami's instructions and how do you know what is Swami's test? One day Swami comes up to him and there was an elderly devotee with Swami. And Swami tells this lecturer of ours, he says, what have you done? So he says, Swami, BSc. And looks at the devotee, BSc is okay for you? So he says, yes Swami, BSc is okay. We can train the boy like that. Then Swami looks at, turns back to this boy and says that, you know, this devotee, he has a oxygen factory in Delhi.
Okay, okay? The devotee, huh?
Yeah. And Swami says, I want to open an oxygen factory in Puttaparthi. Okay. So I want to send you to him in Delhi so that you can get trained and come.
Okay? No, technically that is feasible. Swami can do anything.
Right, Swami can do anything. Okay. But this boy is wondering, oxygen factory and Swami? So is Swami trying to test me with, you know, with the lure of a city and seeing whether if I'm choosing to be with Swami? And to add to that, Swami also says, see, if it is you, no, you'll permanently be with me. So I would prefer to get somebody like you trained for this job.
So manage my oxygen
to manage
factory.
His oxygen factory. And he's having no clue. So he's thinking in his mind, if I say yes and show a bit too much of eagerness, then Swami would say, you fellow, you want to stay with me? And the moment I say Delhi, you're ready to go. Okay. If he says no, Swami will tell you, simply want to sit here lazily and have my darshan and not do anything.
And plus you yourself have said that you'll do whatever you're
right, whatever I tell you. So he was in a complete fix. Is Swami testing him or is Swami really giving commanding him an opportunity and it's a command? So he started praying to Swami, Swami, please, you know, I think this is the most important thing. When you know that the same Swami who's your refuge has come out to test you and your battle is with that same Swami, he takes a recourse in prayer to the Swami within. You know, he starts saying, Swami, I pray to you, let me make the right choice. Reveal to me what you're exactly hinting at. Okay, and he's going on praying and Swami is going on with his details of, you know, this Delhi and it's a nice place and you can go there and just 6-7 months you can get trained, you can come back and you can set it up here and all this is going on. And he's praying inside. Swami, tell me what exactly are you hinting at? And then Swami makes a statement. Delhi Ra, very nice city. If you go and stand in the bus stand for 5 minutes, you can get married. Okay, 5 minutes bus stand lo unte, pelle aipothundi. Okay. The moment Swami said that and he could see that mischief in Swami's eyes, he knew that Swami was just, you know, kidding. So immediately he caught Swami's feet and he said, Swami, I would prefer to be with Swami. I would like to stay with Swami. And Swami looked at him like that. Then Swami looked at the devotee and said, no, this boy doesn't want to go. We'll look for somebody else.
For the oxygen factory training.
For the oxygen factory. And the oxygen factory never came to be and this person never was sent to Delhi. I think that is where, you know, the person who is sometimes when you are in the pursuit of Swami, if somebody comes and tells you that Swami is guiding me through you, through me, Swami has asked me to pass on this message to you, I think we would be wasting time sometimes by seeing whether that person is genuine or not. What is the credentials of the person who is claiming to be carrying Swami's message? I think what is important is to pray to Swami within and ask, Swami, is this really you? If it is you, I'm ready to follow it, but if it is not you, you alone can guide me. I think that's the most important. Many a times we lose time in seeing whether what is the credentials of that person, who he's been so close to Swami, who he cannot lie. I think that is where we lose our way a bit.
Exactly. Another thought that came up, you know, Prem, from what you were saying, of course, we will go further on to this path of, this discussion of credentials of somebody communicating on behalf of Swami and all that. But as you said, you know, as I was listening to you narrate the experience of Ravi Kumar, sir, he had to distinguish quickly whether Swami is here being a coach and telling him what to do,
or an examiner,
or being an examiner and testing him whether he'll jump at the opportunity or not. And what he did was beautiful. He prayed to Swami and he got to know that it was a test and he passed the test. Now comes back, we come back to the crucial point of the Aradhana day, the Mahasamadhi. Swami's Mahasamadhi, is it, what is it? Is Swami being a coach there, or is Swami testing us? You know, what if Swami is being a coach over there? What is that command that he is giving us via that event? If Swami is being an examiner there, what is it that he is testing via that event? I think the best course of action for us to take would be to consider both the possibilities. If he is a coach, what is the message he is giving us? And go ahead and follow that. And if it is a test, what is the test and how are we supposed to pass it? I think if we answer both these scenarios, both these cases, then the significance of Aradhana Mahotsav will hit us directly. Taking it as, you know, as a coach, if we take it as Swami as a coach, I think it becomes very, very clear as to what Swami is telling. Swami is saying, all the while you want Swami. You said you want Swami and nothing else. Now see, have you got Swami or not? If you feel you have not got Swami, then you never had Swami at all. Because Swami is not a person that you can lose. I mean, it prods us on to think deeper as to who Swami is. And how is it that I can get Swami so that I never lose him again? I'm reminded of a dream I had. You know, it was a few months after Swami left the physical. Mm-hmm. In the dream, so many things happen. And the scene is as if Swami has come back, you know.
Okay.
So Swami is walking and we are all very thrilled and happy. And in fact, I'm telling all the people around me there that let us talk only happy and nice things with Swami.
Okay.
Because we want Swami cheerful. But actually when Swami comes, I don't know what happens, and I tell him something that till that date I had never thought about. I had never imagined, nor had I ever prayed. That is what convinces me that it is not me. It is something very deep within me, or Swami prompting me, one of these two only, because it's definitely not me. When Swami comes, I tell Swami, Swami, ee shariram kuda pancha bhautikam. This body is also made up of the five elements.
Pointing to Swami. Okay.
And when I'm saying this body, I'm meaning this new fresh body, which has, you know, resurrected and come. It is not the old body, which was buried. So I'm saying, even this body is made up of the five elements, even this body will go one day. Swami, when you left us once, it was unbearable sorrow, Swami. Please ensure that we never get such sorrow again. Prepare us in such a manner. That is what I'm praying to Swami. And Swami apparently gets very moved and walks away, and everyone around is talking, saying that, see, this fellow told us don't talk inauspicious things, and the first thing he talks to Swami when he comes is about his death. And today when I look back at that dream, I feel, oh, that is a strong message from the coach. That's a message from the coach saying that, you know what, you wanted God because happiness lies only in union with God. And you thought your happiness lies only in union with Swami. You were right in that. But you messed up in what you thought is union with Swami. You thought union with Swami is staying with him in the bedroom or sitting in Prashant Nilayam all the while. I feel he is coaching us and prodding us to discover our true greatness and glory by ensuring and finding him in such a manner that never again will Aradhana day hit us.
Just taking a completely different track. You know, let's say you're talking about self-realization. You're talking about the self-knowledge.
Hmm.
After you pursue it with lifetimes of, you know, relentlessness, what is the final state you reach? Tattvamasi. I mean, you know it, I know it. Imagine the truth which you reach after all that effort. You and I know it. Okay, but what does Vedanta say is, true knowledge is that which once it comes can never leave.
Hmm.
And true knowledge is that once it comes, ignorance leaves, never to come back. So that is a touchstone to tell you, are you really, truly in that state of self-realization? Which means that at any situation, put in any condition, you will still be thinking that you are divine. In fact, there is a little story which somebody was telling the other day. There is a monk in the Himalayas who actually attained self-realization, who said, I want to test this out. He says, I'm going to stop thinking that I'm divine. let me see if I'm able to forget it. He says there is no moment he's able to forget that thought, because that which comes will never leave. And that's exactly when you said that Swami was the coach. He said, you thought that you had Swami. You thought that you have found God, but have you really found Him? And it is an eye-opener to us that we did not find Him. But eventually when we find Him, we will come back with that same understanding that He never left us. Just like how when you search self-realization or self-knowledge, when you finally find it, it comes with the understanding that, oh, it was always within me. Was there a moment when I did not have it? And exactly like that, though we feel right now when we think of the Aradhana day that we missed Swami, we did not find the real Swami, the day when we pursue Him and find the real Swami, it will again come back with the reinforcement that we never lost Him. He was always with us. That is because that real Swami is the Swami within, who is absolutely independent of all factors outside.
And if we take Swami as the examiner now, it is just His way of asking us, testing us, whether you have Swami. You say that Swami is omnipresent. You say Swami is omnipotent. You say that you may be on top of a mountain in the bottom of the ocean. That is what I have told you. You know, that poem is there where Swami beautifully says, whether you're on top of a mountain, in the bottom of the ocean, whether you're in a valley or in a hill or in fire, you're anywhere, Sai is always in you, above you, around you, below you, everything. And you sat and nodded. You clapped. You applauded. You felt a thrill and you said, this is the truth. Not only did you do that, you went and propagated it. You spoke about it to 100 others. You told, so my Swami will never leave me. Are you sure about it? Yes, Swami. Are you sure Swami is God? Yes, Swami. Will nothing change it? No, Swami. Then I let go of my body. Now what? How can you ask, where are you gone, Swami? You just now said, where am I gone? That I am everywhere. How can you say that I am gone? This is a test. Now what will you do? Now what will you do? If you considered only, you know, so Swami to be that little frame, then you will start looking for some other container which will hold that same divine principle, forgetting the truth that Swami, what Swami said, that everything that you see is nothing but a container of that, because there is nothing else other than that. So it's almost like a test to a lifetime of learning that we have received. So in either case, whether Swami, we take it as a coach giving a message, the message is the same as the test. You know, it actually we see in life also that's what happens. If you see what the coach teaches alone is what he tests for. There's no difference between a test and our learning in a classroom. It is the same. So whether we take it as a test or a message from Swami, it comes down to the same thing about how can I find my Swami? How can I connect with my Swami such that never again will I have to lose Swami? Because Swami says, if you think you have lost Swami, then you are not connected. Right. Because Swami is something you can't lose at all. Because when you, as you said, when you come to the ultimate realization, you will realize that you can't lose Him because there is no you without Him. Actually, there is no you and Him. It's all one. So, if you think that Swami is something gettable and losable, then you have not got Swami. And if I have spent 85 years of my life teaching you how to not get Swami, it's high time that I teach you how to get Swami. And for that, this one episode is enough. That is the marvelous significance.
You know, before we come to the last leg of this discussion, when the Aradhana day happened, when 24th April 2011 happened, you know, I think based on the questions which were raised, people could be clearly divided into two groups. Of course, just for the sake of argument, the degrees of variation is so much. But there were a set of people who were asking, who next? Okay, a lot of people are coming and asking, who next? Okay, Swami is not there. I mean, with regards to the trust, with regards to the legacy of Satyasai, they were asking, who next?
Prem Sai.
Right, and you know, okay, Prem Sai, when is he coming? Or who is going to come over? And who is going to run the whole thing? Who is going to, you know, do the things which Swami did?
It was just right? Automatically assumed that Prem Sai is waiting
right.
to take over the
So
reign.
There was that one set which said, who next? And let's do whatever it takes to go after that person. But there were a lot of others who said, what next? Swami has done this to me, what next? What is it that He wants me to learn? What is it that He is trying to drive in here? So what is next? And there's one devotee who showed us when you pursue that thought, what next? Swami, you've done this to me, what am I supposed to do with this? There was one devotee who showed us the way, what happens when you pursue that thought, and when you reach a state where you said so beautifully that sometimes even Swami himself can be a distraction. You reach a state where even if Swami chooses to distract you, you cannot be distracted. That is the state you will reach. And this is not what we are telling, dear listeners. We are not over-celebrating an individual. You will yourself see whom we are talking about. But before that, we'll take a short break. We're going to come back to this. And dear listeners, don't go away. This is really the most powerful part of this discussion, we are sure.
Yantakalami Badal Krishna
Prem, you know, when you introduced a devotee, even I was wondering who the devotee is. Of course, it was just a momentary thought, momentary confusion. Who else can it be other than Radha? Dear listeners, Radha is such a devotee on whom Swami has written plays. Swami has written the songs that she sung about. Swami has, you know, possibly shed tears for Radha. What is the magic that Radha did is something that all of us should learn from, because Radha faced a very, 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 very similar episode in her life. where she got separated from her Krishna forever, apparently. Just like we have got separated from our Swami. But you know, the speciality is, unlike any of us, Radha has been very, very wise. Because Radha did not wait for the ultimate physical disappearance of her Krishna. She had a kind of an Aradhana Mahotsavam, even before actually Krishna physically left his body. And she transformed that Aradhana into a real Mahotsavam. In fact, Swami would often say that Radha is the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradhana, of Aradh. All these words, you know, are there in the letters in her name. Radha, Aadhar, Dhara and Aradh. Aradh meaning worship, Dhara is flow, Aadhar is basis, Radha is Radha. That is why when we discuss the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradh, it will be absolutely incomplete if we don't discuss Radha, because going by Swami's words in his discourses, Radha is the Aadhar for the Dhara of Aradh.
Before we come to what Swami has himself told about this phenomenal devotee, there is a work by K. Munshi. Now, we've spoken about K. Munshi in one of our shows earlier. He has written this phenomenal work called Krishna Avatar. And if you read the introduction for that work, he says that this is not, from the Valmiki, the Vyasa's version of Mahabharata or any other version. You know, for me, Krishna is my hero. He says he is everything for me. And this Krishna Avatar is my visualization of what his life would have been. And many places where he puts a certain scene, a certain dialogue, a certain interaction with a devotee, you know that it has not come from his mind. You know, you can be sure that there is some kind of supreme inspiration which has guided his hands when he wrote that. And I can feel it very strongly when he writes about this episode where Krishna leaves Radha. Now, because he writes in that particular day when the day before Krishna is supposed to leave for Mathura, the news comes to Radha that, you know, this is what is going to happen and Krishna is leaving and we never know if he's going to come back. Okay, so Krishna goes around meeting all the people in the village, telling them that he's leaving the next day. And finally, the last person he comes to is Radha. He comes late in the night and he comes to the banks of Yamuna. He knows that that is the place where he'll find her. He comes there and he breaks the news to her. And understandably, she's very, very pained. She's crying. She's in a lot of pain. So seeing her in that state, came when she writes that Krishna makes an offer. He says, Radha, will you not come with me? You know, I know that you cannot live without me. I'm sure that all others might be able to manage it, but you will not be able to manage the separation. Will you come with me? Shall I take you to Mathura? Okay, and that time it seems Radha says that Krishna, the Krishna whom I got attracted to, the Krishna who was my very life, was a cowherd Krishna. And tomorrow when you step into Mathura, you're stepping in there as a prince. And I would have anyway lost the Krishna whom I loved. And she says that I want to seize this opportunity. This is a loss which I have to face. It's a reality which I have to face at some time. I want to seize this opportunity. And how did she seize it? My God.
Definitely. She seized it in a manner that is just beyond comprehension for any of us. She turned and told Krishna, Krishna, why do you tell me to come along with you? Do you think that you will ever be able to separate yourself from me? When I look at the creepers over here, what I see is my Krishna. The bees flying here, bees that are buzzing about, it is Krishna. The trees, the flowers, the birds, everything I see is Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When I open my eyes, I see Krishna. When my ears are alert, they hear Krishna. When I breathe in Krishna. And every single cell of my body reverberates with Krishna. How can I ever be separated from Krishna? It is a myth. It is an illusion. And you know, you in this form, Krishna, are coming and telling me that you will get separated from me. It's a distraction. You know, this is what we spoke about in the beginning, saying that the form of the Lord becomes a distraction once we realize the truth. Because it doesn't depend, because wherever we see, whatever we see the Lord, because that is the truth. And as you said, this truth is such that once you get it, you can never lose it. And that is what Radha had. And so, when all the Gopikas are crying, all the Gopikas are wailing that they will miss Krishna, Krishna chooses only to go to Radha and make this offer saying, Radha, I will take you with me to Mathura. And here is Radha apparently spurning Krishna's offer and saying that Krishna, you know, when you look at it, it's more like a dialogue between the individual soul, the Jivatma and the Paramatma, just before the final merger. It is like that struggle between the river and ocean that Swami often says, that the river struggles to get in the ocean tries to push it away. But when the river battles it, the ocean rises above and takes the river into its womb, into its bosom. That is how Swami describes this final struggle that happens. It's almost like that. Because now the river has reached the ocean. Radha, the dhara of her aradh, the flow of her devotion has reached the ultimate ocean. The Krupa Sagara, the Karuna Sagara, the Lord, it has reached. But the ocean is trying to push back. And you know, trying to bring back Radha to saying that, Radha, come with me. Don't get separated from me. At that moment, if Radha had even thought that, yes, from tomorrow I'll be separate from my Krishna, I think the illusion would have come back again. But no, once the delusion had left, nothing could ever cover her eyes again. And so, though she was the only Gopika to whom this offer was made of come along with me, she spurns it and says, no, Krishna, you go wherever you wish. You will never go away from me because you are mine and nothing can take that away from me.
Looking at it two ways, the first one, what came when she writes about this, you know, after Radha says this, and you know, he writes, his view of Krishna avatar, the personality of Krishna, is somebody who's come for nothing other than dharma samsthapana. Okay, and that is how he pictures Krishna. And Krishna tells Radha at that moment, he said, I've come for a great task. What I've come is for a very, very important task which is going to influence the life of so many people. But that energy and that sustenance for this task, I will draw from your love. He says, you have given me such pure love which I cannot seek elsewhere. I will use this love as a sustenance and energy for the task I've come to perform. And, you know, if you look at Mother Radha as a very, very human person, and if we are able to put ourselves in that place and put 24/7 in the place of what she was about to go through, you know, we might not be in the state where we know that Swami and I are one. But can we tell ourselves that, Swami, I'm in immense pain. This pain is so much. Can I reach a state where this 24th April 2011 will not come again in my life? Because that is exactly what Radha said. She said, okay, you're giving me an offer, which is like a distraction, I take it. But at some point I have to face this reality. Can I face this reality and come out of this in a manner that this separation will never ever happen again, even if you choose it? And that's exactly what Mother Radha did. And as you said, Swami penned a beautiful drama about Radha Bhakti, for which he chose every character who would act in it. And during the course of that drama, you know, Swami wrote all the songs, Swami tuned all the songs, Swami taught the dialogues. One particular boy who was chosen to play the role of Radha herself was one particular S. Kumar. He was a singer and there were a lot of songs. The song, dear listeners, which we started this particular section of the afternoon satsang, that song on Radha was part of that Radha Bhakti drama. And during the course of that drama, Swami was training them how to act. And in the process, Swami gave him a very, very beautiful insight. Because whenever we talk of Radha in the traditional form of portrayal, we always think of her as somebody who was always crying, was always in tears, who you know, withered herself away through the process of pining. But what Swami told was a very, very different view of what Radha was. Mm-hmm. I think we'll just listen to that particular part in his own voice, how Swami taught them through the process of just teaching one song, how beautifully Swami taught them.
The action will happen in the institute auditorium. Those days we call it institute. Swami will come and see how each and every scene is taking shape. So, scene by scene, he will cut down and say, hey, the role of Radha is to be majestic, not to be cheap. He will check that too.
Dignified.
Yeah, very dignified. Do not think of the role of Radha as someone who is portrayed in all other movies and pictures in a very different way. She is such a devotee, and that is where Swami gave the meaning of Radha in one of those dialogues. He said, Radha ki adharam Dhara Aradhan. He said, take the word Radha, R-A-D-A. Radha, Aradh, Dhara, Adhar. All are inside this, Swami said. So the basis of Radha is to pour tears of love for Krishna. That's what it means. That's all he defined. That's your role in the drama. You need to think of Krishna, and the moment you think of Krishna, you should feel so happy. Tears of joy should come, not tears of sorrow.
Oh.
So whenever you chant the name Krishna, there should be happiness. You can always go back. This is a human form. So there's a song in this, Niluva Nida, Leni Bratuku, Ni Korakani Moyudana. So there's a lot of meaning to that. Krishna, it'll come. So, you know, you're a human part of it. Niluva Nida, Leni Bratuku. You know, it's like, because there is a scene in this drama where Radha is separated, you know, from the whole village, where she cannot even see Krishna when he's visiting Repalle. So that's a sad song, but when Swami said, the moment she says Krishna, the moment she becomes joyful.
Oh.
No one would have ever taught this kind of concepts. These are all concepts which are very, very powerful, which means
and
what?
Actually, I think here Radha is only a medium. Swami is teaching us how to be his devotees.
Exactly. Exactly. You got it right. Every one of us is Radha. Swami says that there's only one Purushottama. Everybody is Prakriti. Everybody else is Prakriti.
If we can be like that, the moment we listen to Swami, the moment we hear his name, we are always joy.
Yeah.
We are always in ecstasy.
Exactly. That's why Swami says, you know, when you sing bhajans, sing Krishna Rama with happiness. Don't put castor oil face, Swami will say. Don't even sing too many, you know, Dayakaro songs.
Yeah.
We want Swami's name to be chanted.
Right. And so, that comes when you have that sincere love for him.
Exactly.
When you love him so much, the moment you hear about him, you are in joy.
Yes. The enthusiasm and the energy level should be bursting out. But Bhagavan knows, as a human being, you go through ups and downs, sorrow and happiness. But when you chant God's name, the whole energy has to take different shape. That is a concept which I learned at the lotus feet. So that is why Swami said, when I ask you to sing Krishna, it's got to be happy. So, Niluvanida Leni Bratuku Ni Korakani Moyudana Krishna Krishna. It should be Krishna. It should not be like that. Krishna Niluvani. Again, you will go back to, because human being is made ups and downs. He knows that. But that is where he proved as to how Radha is an evolved soul.
You know, hearing that Prem, so many thoughts come, but the most predominant among all those thoughts is, I really felt, Swami, yes, I also want to be like Radha. You know, Krishna was leaving to Mathura, and she saw an opportunity in that. She saw an opportunity in that to ensure that Krishna will never ever be able to leave her again. And that's how her life continues after that. We never again hear of Krishna physically coming back to Radha. But Radha is totally lost in Krishna. I really feel inspired that...
Actually, sorry to break your flow here.
Huh?
In fact, the story which Swami writes for Radha Bhakti is that of Krishna coming back to Repalli.
Oh, okay.
The story which Swami wrote is that Krishna sends word that I'm coming back to see all of you. And Swami writes that by then Radha has become so mad in her love for Krishna that she is actually treated as an outcast. She is kept away from the village, and especially on the day when they come to know that Krishna is coming, they say that let her not come into the village. They try to lock her up in a room. I'm not exactly sure of the story, but after Krishna comes and meets all of them, Krishna goes in search of Radha, you know, to see her. And that scene which Swami has portrayed is very beautiful, because he goes in search to Yamuna, banks of Yamuna, where he knew that Radha will be waiting, and she's sitting there seeing Yamuna flow. And Krishna goes from behind her, and you know, with surprise, he says, Radha, I'm here. And Radha turns back, looks at Krishna, and gives a very faint smile, and turns back. And Krishna is surprised. He says, Radha, I am here, your Krishna is here, I've come back to you. And then she turns back and says, what do you mean by come back? And then she runs to the waters of Yamuna. She picks up, you know, the water in her hand and says, Krishna, are you not in this water? she runs to some flower and says, Krishna, are you not in this flower? Whom are you trying to fool by trying that, you know, you left me and you come back to me? You know, you can never leave me now. And that is when Swami has written it in a way, and Swami has, written it for that drama, that Krishna actually falls at her feet. He says, for the first time, somebody in my creation is giving me something. And then Krishna says, you don't want anything from me. I've come back to you. You don't want anything. She says, no, I don't want. There is nothing that you have you can give me. Then Krishna says, don't you want even my love? And Radha says, no, I don't even want your love, because I have you. You know, that is the state which Radha reached. And that's why, you know, these songs were written by Swami with all that pain, with all that yearning.
You know, if and when we happen to meet Premasai, wouldn't it be wonderful that we be able to tell like this, saying that, you know, we don't need you because we have got you already. You can't ever separate us. Now, I was just thinking, you know, coming, maybe just one point when we say of mediums and people, Swami communicating through somebody, that is just like a temporary stopgap solution for a universal problem that we have to discover an ultimate solution to. Today I run behind a medium, tomorrow if that medium dies, what happens? I mean, do I have a second Aradhana day? Then what? Then do I run after a third medium? Will I keep just running from pillar to post and keep crying all my life from separation from Swami? Or like Radha, will I use this Aradhana day as an opportunity to ensure that never ever in my life will I have to spend even one moment in separation from Swami? If you and me are able to do that, Prem, I think the Aradhana day will definitely become an Aradhana Mahotsavam. It is definitely a grand festival, because it is celebrating the greatest and the ultimate of the life's pursuit, which is Swami.
Absolutely. As we started this entire discussion with, whatever we do, whatever we pursue, whatever journey we start, the idea is to reach where that journey is supposed to culminate. And dear listeners, we definitely see this as the culmination. If you ask, why did Swami stage an Aradhana day? Why did Swami stage the 24th April the way it went? I feel it is for this, to give us that immense pain and to take this resolve that, Swami, I don't want another 24th April 2011 in my life. You know, and that will be possible only if I am able to catch that real you. Because whether it is peace that you're after, whether it's love that you're after, whether it's Swami you're after, if you find that Swami within, who is independent of all factors outside, who is independent of all the ups and downs and changes outside, that is when you have got Swami. And what is the point in saying that I want Swami and I want Swami from any other source, if that source is going to put you through the same journey and not the culmination, not the end where it's supposed to lead?
If I am seeking Swami permanently, I have to seek it from a source which in itself is permanent. If I'm seeking it from a temporary source, it'll be just like me thinking Swami is the idol of Swami, and if that idol breaks, Swami is gone. That's all. The idol is just a medium. That is what any medium will be able to do, a temporary source. Let us seek ultimate the way Radha did. Dear listeners, the time in our studio is 2 p.m. and Brother Chandu is already waiting here for his next segment, Love to Love. I'm sure that will be wonderful. So if you have anything to share, I'm sure there will be lots to share, because this topic is like that. This whole Aradhana Day thing is like that. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will leave you with that beautiful song that Brother Eskumar mentioned about, the song that Radha sang out to her Krishna, the song that spoke of how she appears sorrowful when she sings of the world, but there is joy when she sings about Krishna. This was the same song sung many, many years later during Saptaham in Prashantinilayam in Bhagwan's physical presence. But the song is the same, as composed and tuned by Bhagwan. I'm sure you will enjoy this as much as we have enjoyed this. We offer this entire segment, as always, at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet, and leave you with this song.
Krishna, 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 ప్రతుకు నీ కొరకని మోయుదానా కృష్ణ నిలువనీడ లేని బ్రతుకు నీ కొరకని మోయుదానా నిలువదురానా పాపవు మనసుకు కను పాపవు మాటకు పసి పాపవు మనసుకు నిన్ను విడచి హర నిమిషము నిన్ను విడచి హర నిమిషము నిలువగలే Krishna ka nagara Krishna